morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion. Today is Sunday, November 25th, 2018. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America, and we welcome you all. We'll start this morning with our morning prayer.
From the Blue Book, page 61. Father, teach me how to still the clamoring of sense and fill my place as listener, that I may hear thy voice and grow to understand thy word and so become thy messenger. Then teach me how to banish pride and stubborn will, that I may be thy representative, with no false sense of human zeal, that every word may bless and heal when I thy message give.
Thank you. And miscellaneous writings. We today in this classroom are enough to convert the world if we are of one mind, for then the whole world will feel the influence of this mind, as when the earth was without form, and mind spake, and form appeared. Okay, well, I hope I didn't scare you all away yesterday. We had a sobering Bible study, and now we will get into subject of soul and body. We will first start with the watching point.
Watch number 184. Watch lest in your effort to realize that God is love, you fail to strengthen your faith in your ability to reflect that love. Rain would do little good if people endeavored to catch it in cracked vessels. What good is love to man if animal magnetism has tricked him out of his confidence in his ability to reflect it? Man's ability to reflect love is just as real as love itself. Man is the reflection of love, and he needs only to acknowledge this fact. All there is to err is the acknowledgement of it. Similarly, with good, the acknowledgement of man's reflection of love must accompany the admission that God is love. End quote.
Thank you. Any comments on that?
Well, I just wanted to relate a story that Mr. Evans told us long ago. And he spoke, was talking to someone, and the person was complaining, if divine love meets every human need, how come I have so many needs unmet? And his response was, well, where is your divine love?
Thank you.
In other words, that person needed to be the expression of divine love, allow it to happen. You find everything made right. Divine love is not something that falls out of the sky and lands in your lap. Next thing you know, you're blessed. It doesn't work that way. As his image and likeness, it operates through us. We are its servants.
Thank you.
And I would add that that point is, I have experienced it as a sticking point where I feel like I'm not loving enough and I somehow have to work to become loving, and I realize it's really just a suggestion that I'm not loving enough, that I can't reflect it. And this watching point really points that out. And just other people I've known have said things like that where they need to work towards it, or, you know, it's the human mind sort of tripping you up and telling you you need to achieve some sort of level, which is the opposite of what we're saying, which is it's already there. And man just is God's loving reflection. Always.
Thank you, Michael. I used to very much struggle with this, thinking, you know, I wasn't loving enough. And once you get thinking that, you get into a human sense of it, and you start humanly trying to love and rush around smartly, accomplishing much, as Mrs. Betty says in her article, Improve Your Time. So there are a lot of innuendos in this science that we must be very clear on. Love is the reflection of love, with a capital L, of God. We love by getting ourselves out of the way and letting God use us, Michael said, and as Bruce said too. And if you feel that you are, that you need more love, what should you do?
Love.
Yeah, but before that,
ask God,
God to show you love.
Get closer to God and feel His love.
Yes.
Work for yourself. And then when you feel God's love, you will be able to express it.
Thank you. Because when I used to tell myself I need to be more loving, that's when I got into the human sense of things. So you've got to do your prayerful work first and ask God for His exactly. love. You know, it says in, I forget which chapter in the New Testament, but if you need more wisdom, ask for it, and God who loves you will give it to you liberally. But get on your knees and ask for His love, the divine love, and you will feel motivated to do things perhaps you never even thought to do. Or sometimes things, if you have that in your heart, things will just come to you. I hear it from some of you, you know, someone will come and ask help with something, or you get a chance to share the truth with someone because it's in your heart. And you didn't go around proselytizing. They came to you. God is working. God is doing this. It's a vast difference.
And Jesus said, if I be lifted up, I will draw all men unto me. And what is that? What is it that draws all men unto you? The love
of God. Christly thought, the love.
Yeah.
That is what will draw all men unto our church. Christly love. They will feel it. And even those, if they come into church or listen on the internet, and even if maybe they don't understand all the words, they will feel something different, special. They will be attracted to it. It is the one attraction, love, spirit, capital S and L. This is the whole purpose of who and what we are, to get rid of this self-sense, let God use us. Anytime you feel inadequate in any way, then Mary says you work for yourself. And truly, how can you love someone else if you don't feel God's love or you don't feel loved?
Which love will be loving?
Okay.
I said, which love will be doing the loving?
Yes.
If you don't feel God's love.
Yes.
I think it becomes a very conditional kind of thing, because I know before I didn't really know how to love people. So the love I had was, you know, if this person is this, acts in this manner to me, then I'll act in this manner to them. And that didn't work well at all.
So that's because it's backwards, right? The golden rule. It's not do unto others as they have done unto you, but rather...
We'd be in big trouble.
Do unto others as you would have them.
Anyone else on this? It's a very important point. This is, Eddie, our definition of man in recapitulation. The image of love. I always go back to that, feeling less than loving. And we've been taught here, love without principle is what?
Mersh. Mush.
Mush. jellyfish.
A jellyfish.
Principle without love. That's an iceberg. They have to go together. And that's why we have to have sometimes classes like we did yesterday. It can't all be the loving side. It's got to be a combination.
I thought it was interesting in our lesson when Jesus is healing, going to heal Lazarus, and they're at the take away the stone. And Martha says to him, you're going to stink, you know, don't open that. And Jesus said to her, said I not unto thee? He didn't say, oh, dear, it's going to be okay. And, you know, God is love. He said not unto thee? I thought, wow, you know, he rebukes the thought before he went forward. I thought that was, never noticed that before.
Thank you. Very good point. The error must be rebuked.
We kind of combined it with the rule for motives and acts, because I didn't quite understand that part about your personal attachment. And what I finally got from that was that personal attachment is that I want this animal to live forever, so that means I'm thinking that the animal's going to die. That's the one that I really liked, whereas one that I didn't care for seemed to live forever. And I realized that was the impersonal love, where I wasn't actually malpracticing on that animal, because I wasn't afraid that I thought the animal was going to live forever because I didn't like it. It finally occurred to me, so now I'm trying to use impersonal love, which I see as being God, because God's style of love, because he can't possibly love everybody, well, he could, I suppose, personally, but it's a universal type love, which is just from the highest standpoint.
It's impartial, right?
Well, thank you, Mike. That's good. And people feel that about people can feel that way about other people as well, because they want, I mean, I see some people, they just want certain people to live forever, and if they ever pass on, it's like there's this anger at God, and why did this happen? I mean, that this isn't what's going on here. We shouldn't, those are feelings we need to deal with. Or the other way, you can't wait for someone else to die because you don't like them. I mean, that's horrible. Both are forms of malpractice. As you brought out, it's malpractice to think that they've died in the first place. And that's what this lesson says about Lazarus. Jesus knew that Lazarus had not died. If he had thought he died, he couldn't have brought him back the way he did. So we have to make sure we stay in this right scientific state of thought of there is no death. We go on forever, and either one of those is the human picture, and something, if you ever feel that way, it's an indication you need to pray and get your thoughts out of the human sense of life into the divine sense of everlasting life. Now that will bring us to, well, our subject, soul and body. Golden Text, Psalm 34, the Lord redeemeth the soul of his servant, and none of them that trust in him shall be desolate. And then we have this wonderful responsive reading from Jeremiah. And again, I'm grateful for Linda taking up this subject yesterday on Jeremiah. And Parthens wrote about citation 6, Lillian, you want to read that for us?
O house of Israel, cannot I do with you as this potter, saith the Lord? Behold, as the clay is in the potter's hand, so are ye in my hand, O house of Israel.
Thank you. Any comments on that?
I read something from Spurgeon, which is so beautiful about this potter. It says, oh, if you are only willing to be as clay in the great potter's hands, he is able to make you vessels. If he is able to make you vessels meet for the master's use, the use may be very varied, and the vessels may differ in form and beauty. But if you are willing to be as clay in his hands, he will fashion you so that you may be a vessel for his glory and for the benefit of those around you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That is beautiful.
I liked what F.U. Henry said. Was not quite as, that part wasn't quite as glowing, but it also stated that if the clay is too stiff or if there's a little pebble in it, it can throw everything off.
Yes.
Right, we have to be humble and flexible, don't we?
Yes.
The little pebble is the pride, isn't it?
Luann, do you
want
to say anything?
Luann
is a...
She's an expert potter.
I love those subjects when we talk about the potter, because every time I go into my shop, I think about God being the master potter and I just the clay. So when I sit down to the pottery wheel, I can really relate to this story. Sometimes when you're throwing something on the wheel, there's air bubbles in it or hard pieces of something got in, mixed in the clay or something like that. So, yeah, you have to really work at getting those things out of there. And sometimes it does, you do have to just squish it all up and rework the clay and then start over with fresh clay and make something really beautiful. Because you can't really make anything with air bubbles or chunks in it. It doesn't form correctly, and it doesn't fire correctly when you put it in the kiln. It will blow up if there's air bubbles in it.
Thank you. And so it is with us. We have to be willing to be formed by that hand and not resist it, but yield under it. That, again, that's getting self out of the way so that God can create this marvelous masterpiece in each one of us.
That is possible for each one of us because God's work is already perfect. So we're not talking about God recreating us. We're talking about us clearing our vision so that we see more clearly what God has already made. When we are put in the fire, the tests, if there's pride in us or some materialism in us or some air bubble in us, we're going to blow up, aren't we? We're going to have an experience that's not very pleasant. Well, the point of that experience is to wake us up. And if we take it correctly, don't shoot the messenger, we will wake up. We will get rid of that pride or that air bubble or that whatever. And we will see more clearly what God has in fact made. If we gain humility and get rid of pride, if we're willing to do that, we will be a more perfect image and likeness of God. We will act like it.
Parthen said in his blog, "Mortal mind hates being clay in the potter's hands and desires to take for itself some, if not all, of the glory of God by having a hand in its own shaping. Personal sense invented physicality to disprove the existence of God. All that mortal mind designates as the so-called seasons of life, from birth via physical procreation to the demise of the physical body, are mirages hindrances, and distractions to keep me from following the first commandment, thou shalt have no other gods before me. Goes in line with what Gary was saying. You know, this idea that we are misshapen pieces of earthen vessels. We're not. But we must see it correctly. See what God has created correctly. Put it all in focus. Parsons also mentions a wonderful article, which I all mentioned to you, I know, and that is Mrs. Betty's article on age and the necessity of spending hours daily uninterrupted on prayer, on aligning yourself up with God so that you go forth in the day being a blessing with power and not a fearful mortal bumbling around, but you go to your source, take from Him, and wonderful things happen. Also, I was quite pleased because a lot of my favorite articles were mentioned in the forum this week. And I keep them all in my old Bible that I have. One was age, another one was sight by A. Kroger, that one was referred to by Barbara. And in that article it also refers to the importance of first commandment and obeying it. If any of you haven't read that article or are familiar with it, it is on our website. It says, a letter written by a Christian Science practitioner to a patient born totally blind. This letter brought complete healing to the patient after having several months of treatment. And the letter starts, my dear, I want you to see what must take place in your consciousness. With the utmost clarity, you must see that material eyes do not need healing, for matter does not see, and nothing we can say or do about it can ever give it that which it never had, namely sight. What must be cast out is the lie about the truth, namely that sight is material, not spiritual. You may rejoice that you have come to the point in your journey from sense to soul where divine love is forcing you to lay hold on what Mrs. Eddy says in Science and Health. Metaphysics resolves things into thought and exchanges the objects of sense for the ideas of soul. And then the cause of all loss and suffering is not because matter is diseased, but because of the breaking of the commandment, thou shalt have no other gods before me, spirit. Keep the first commandment. Separate sight from matter. Restore it to mind where it belongs. And all fear and suffering depart. There is a misconception about soul and body that they're two, right? Spirit somewhere off in the ethers, and then you've got this material body. And it is simply not the truth. We had an article, which I'll have Bruce read, by Peter V. Ross, who was on the carousel, excerpts from Leaves of Healing.
You want to know how mind can rectify bodily conditions? This is easy enough to understand when you recognize that you are mental throughout. You may try to separate yourself into soul and body, ascribing all intelligence to soul and none to body. But the fact is, soul and body are one. They are both mental. Body is the part of soul, or to use the new word, consciousness, which is cognizable to material sense. But it is mental. This is why it talks to you so much. Stop regarding yourself as both soul and body. Stop using the expression body at all, if you like, and regard yourself as consciousness. then it is plain why a change in your thinking will result in a change in what you have been calling body. For body is part of consciousness. Get the fear out of mentality, therefore, and you get the wobbles out of body.
I mean, isn't that wonderful? It makes it so simple. So it's always consciousness. Zeddy calls body the embodiment of right ideas. What are you thinking? And I love, I've mentioned it before, but Carpenter says, if you're having a problem, any kind of problem with your body, it's a red flag saying you're malpracticing on yourself. Maybe you're going around and around with some fears or negativity. Sometimes it's been a bad habit. You don't even know you're doing it. And if you don't get it, if you don't wake yourself up mentally, your body is going to say, stop. Then sometimes you got to take a good look. So listen and be wise. Be aware, mindful, always, living in the present. What are you thinking? What thoughts are you accepting as real? Do you want these thoughts manifested on your body or in your life? It's a good question. That'll pour a bit of cold water on your face. Do you want where your thoughts are? Do you want to go where that thought is taking you or not? Day one with the Father. This is why we do the prayerful work that was mentioned. I and my Father are one. Father that dwelleth in me, he doeth the work. And the Father hath not left me alone. Keep that in your consciousness all day. You can't veer off. And then, another one of my favorite articles is Body by Mrs. Petty. And I will have Gary read the paragraph.
The term mind and body literally means God and man. For man is the expression of mind, and the manifestation of mind is the embodiment of mind. Therefore, man is God's body, and there is but one God. Body is therefore the aggregation of spiritual ideas, forever controlled and governed by the law of life, harmonious and eternal. This understanding of perfect body is the savior of the belief of body and is the law of recovery to any and every claim of error. I may be ignorant of the truth of the body, but that does not alter the body itself. It is whole and perfect now, not because I think it is, but because it is God manifest. Thinking with God, as God, shows me the perfection of the body. But the body is just as perfect before I know it as after. God's substance does not cease to be perfect just because I am ignorant of its perfection, nor does it become perfect because I find out the truth. Its wholeness does not depend upon my degree of enlightenment. It is eternally perfect because it is eternally just what God is, and there is no power anywhere to make it anything else. If we are looking at it through a mental fog, opinions, doubts, fears, confusion, we shall not perceive its perfection. But that does not change the body itself any more than looking at the sun through a fog changes the sun.
Now, so you see, we might weave in and out. You know, we'll have one day we're feeling good and one day we're not feeling so good. But it's the same thing as the sun shining. Just because we don't see the sun doesn't mean it isn't shining there. And so it is with our body. Our body is in God and it remains perfect. It's just our vision that is getting clouded or unclouded. And this is a very important point. This is why we work to keep that vision clear about ourselves and about everyone everywhere.
This gets me to one of Jesus' sayings in this lesson. When Jesus was first told of Lazarus' death, he said, "This sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God." What did he mean? How can this sickness be for the glory of God?
To prove the perfection of God, it hasn't changed. It would prove,
Yes. It was an opportunity for him to show everybody what God's creation really is and what man's perfection really is. What does Mrs. Eddy say about trials? This was a proof, an opportunity to prove God's care. Every time your body tells you that it aches or it hurts, it should be an opportunity for you, for all of us, for me, to get closer to God and to let him and to see him more clearly, and to feel his love more strongly.
A simple thought,
And thereby heal in our consciousness our own body.
That's fine.
Yeah, a simple thought that has helped me as a comeback to feeling anything different is I just tell myself that no, I cannot be anything different from what God is. And that thinking has really helped me a lot with, you know, when pain or I used to have pain in my shoulder and all those things. It just brings it to, you know, who I am. I can only be what God is. And from that, thinking goes the right way.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I know Lil often declares that. A wonderful thing to know. And what was that quote, Dale W. here?
Yeah.
A big Dale Young.
Yes, that was from the article Idea. Whatever is occurring is good, or it is not occurring.
Think about it. So, if what you are seem to be seeing is not good, then you align yourself up to the thought it is the fact, it is not occurring. Call it whatever you want, poor vision, fogginess, the mist is rising up. Get it back into focus.
Well, like what Patton says, call it mirage, hindrance, or distraction.
Yes.
So.
Call it whatever you want. It's trying to get you away from the first commandment. Thou shalt have no other God before me. And I'm sure I covered all I wanted to with that. Linda, what did you write about?
I wrote about the, well, I called it Daily Nearer God, but I came across a poem. I can just read that part that Gilbert Carpenter put in his book, Mary Baker, Her Spiritual Footsteps. In chapter 119, and he was talking about daily demonstrating God in our lives, and how Mrs. Eddy, that was one of her strongest teachings for the people in her home especially. So here's the poem, quote, "If on our daily course our mind be set to hallow all we find, new treasures still of countless price, God will provide for sacrifice. The trivial round, the common task, will furnish all we ought to ask. Room to deny ourselves, a road to bring us daily nearer God. End quote. And that was by John Hebel.
Yeah, and that goes very similar to hymn number 140 in our hymnal. But again, this is what Gary was talking about, and this whole idea of not having two, but one. Everything we do is one in God. We demonstrate. It's why Mrs. Eddy, there was no task too menial in her home. It was to be demonstrated. How would God do it? Make it something wonderful, beautiful, do it with love, capital L, not a burdensome sense or a false sense of duty, but with joy and love. This is what our days should be. And in that chapter, 119, that Linda referred to, Carpenter says, where is God to be found? Shall we seek him in the sunset, in the clouds, in nature? Yes, but only as we are able to see these as symbols of him. If one uses the very food that he eats as a symbol of the infinite love of God and of the fact that he cares for man even as he doth the lilies, then that food will enable man to search out God. If one takes the tree as a manifestation of God, reckoning it as a symbol of God's all-encompassing love, then in the tree one finds God, thereby proving that we have our treasure in earthen vessels. We were talking about earthen vessels earlier with pottery. And there's a quote from Paul where he says, but we have this treasure in earthen vessels. And that's why Carpenter goes on to explain our earthen vessels. We have a treasure in them. We have a treasure in them because why? Should we be staying in them?
God.
His love for us.
Yes.
And one of the more recent Love is a Liberator, we have a beautiful poem by Mrs. Eddy about an oak tree that she just describes it. She doesn't see it as an oak tree. She sees it as a wonderful example of God's love. So we must as well.
Hymn 140, by the way, but hymn 140, it's got like 10 paragraphs, and they only took some of them. So this was one part of the poem that they took and put in it. I just thought I'd mention in case people were confused by it, and so I just left it as this rather than trying to explain.
No, right. Well, this was a little different than what's in our hymn.
Yeah, because they picked and choose different verses.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Okay, go ahead.
What was just described, I guess, is like translating the material into the spiritual. I've known Christian scientists that will describe things like exercise as an expression of discipline or strength or joy. And I was just, I don't know if that could be cleared up in regards to body and, I guess people that do work out or want to work out as a Christian scientist, is there ever like a better or correct way to see it if you do it or want to do it, I guess? That makes sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
And everything comes back to motive, doesn't
yes.
it?
Yes. Yes.
What is your motive for doing whatever it is that you feel like doing? Is it to bless somebody? Is it literally an expression of God's love for mankind? Or is it self-centered?
I think Sidney Young even says it's good to get up and walk around a little bit, but he doesn't say make a God of it.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, he does say that, and it is. And I know, you know, it's easy in the practice, other jobs too, where you're just sitting all day at your desk. And I do think it's good to get up and get some activity. But whenever I do the activity, I mean, now we can be listening to the lesson or we can be listening to the readings of Science and Health. There's a lot of things you can do as you're walking, but or other simple forms of I always think, what did Jesus do? He walked, right? But what did Mrs. Eddy do? She took carriage rides. I mean, I don't think she did that, anything, and yet they said she had the body of a young woman. So, again, it is your motive. But if you're going to a gym, you're going to have to handle the beliefs of everybody around you. And they're all, I don't even know what they do. Their pulses, they're this, they're that, and
competitive,
and look how beautiful my body.
And fear that if they don't do it, they're going to get sick and die.
Heaven forbid you miss one of your workouts. That's where you're in the human mind, and that's where you don't go, okay? So, again, yes, motive. Are you worshiping your body? Is it, forgetting your body? Absent from the body, present with the Lord, yes.
So, and how much time does that take?
How much time is it taking, yes. If you take a walk to see the beauty of God and enjoy the nature of God, then that's different, and you can pray. There are a lot of things that are kind of mindless that you can do, bike riding, somewhat mindless, but you can think about God or listen to things and get a little bit of fresh air and exercise. So, does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you very much, it does.
I think, to resolving things into thought is probably what we are talking about. But it's so, when we resolve things into thought, is to bring it closer to God, what God is. It's not, the other way.
Yes. And you don't willfully say, and now we can get into Jeremy's forum. Jeremy.
Could I just say a quick thing, please?
Okay.
It reminds me of a beautiful testimony from last winter where an individual shoveled the whole driveway of heavy, heavy snow, praying the whole time and had absolutely no ill effects from it. So, as you just pointed out, if that time exercising, if a person's mind is on God and prayer the whole time, I mean, you can work on the world, work on strength for the whole world, etc.
Thank you. Where your thought is, what you're doing, thinking, praising God. All right, Jeremy.
I ended up just looking up the term soul and body and found this thing from Bicknell Young. And I thought, at first I was just reading it, and then I realized I had to share it because it was just such an excellent delineation between what Christian Science healing is compared to New Age. And it also really helped me, although it took a day for me to get the next part. But did you want me to read it? Or?
Well, I'll, there are a couple things I'll bring out, but I didn't want you to go upstairs before we talked about it. So he first brings out, Bicknell Young talking about this, is this idea of visualizing. But here arises the question, how far a thought may be permitted to visualize the results of treatment? Then he answers it, and he said, in answering this question, it is well to first observe that it would be obviously erroneous mentally to behold or to be conscious of no improvement or no results of the treatment. Science and Health, the definition of mind says, quote, deity which outlines but is not outlined. Now, this is no expectation, okay? Here we're talking about visualizing because we say in old age, we say in new age, excuse me, you make your
vision board
to picture what you want. Okay, one thing in science you don't do is expect no healing. Don't you see yourself miserable, sick, poor? That's how you're visualizing yourself. No. Okay, no. And then he goes on to say, when Jesus commanded Lazarus to come forth, he unquestionably exercised the prerogative of mind in outlining the event. He knew that Lazarus would come forth, even the self-same Lazarus. The attempt to outline the results of divine action is objectionable only because human thought however much improved, can only imagine what the divine effect might be. But when mind is actually demonstrated, or speaking more accurately, actually demonstrates its own presence and power, then the healing may be mentally visible, even before it is humanly apparent. Now, so, visualizing. Your expectation should be from God, shouldn't you? Open your thought up. Don't think you're never going to get healed. Don't think you're going to be poor all your life or sick all your life or miserable all your life. Raise your consciousness. Expect good. But then, he's saying here, don't get too specific because you don't know what great good God has for you. Leave it to God. God will bring his presence and power. He will make it manifest. And that's usually a lot better than anything you might have been trying to think about.
The other way is
willful
manipulation.
Yes, it is.
Telling them what it's going to be.
Yes, yes.
And the other way, I think, is really starting from something is terribly wrong, now I'm going to change it by my visualization, where at perfect God, perfect man, as in science, we begin rightly with the right thought that good is here already, and so that becomes the experience. That's the difference,
right.
I think.
Right, it's the difference between visualizing the human objective versus expecting to be what God made.
Yeah, and that's a huge difference, even though it seems maybe to some a small difference, or it can be misconstrued in some way, but it mustn't. This is never about us and what we want. This is about establishing God's kingdom on earth. His will be done, which is always good. So then, Jeremy, what did you write about?
Well, you know, one of the questions or concerns I had was, you know, the way I look, is it showing people that I know that Christian Science isn't helping me at all, because I basically look the same as I used to. So the thought that I needed to be like an Olympic athlete kind of look or something like that, it's funny now, but you know, I thought that for a while, was I not doing a good job, because I didn't. But now I see I'm able to do the work that God's giving me, and I can do it well, and it doesn't cause me any problems, so I don't need to worry about that. I've been really a lot more peaceful, you know, because it was not a real concern, not a real issue I should have been worried about.
And he gives some other too, but that's a good one. And so think about it. Are you trying to? You know, people get obsessed with this, I've got to have this perfect body or this perfect look, all this, what's it called, plastic surgery, and no.
The human mind in full bloom.
Yes. So I thought that was a good example, and let be what God has made you, and be happy and content with what God has made you, and he will make you perfect in his way. He is the potter, remember. He is shaping you. And don't compare yourself to anybody else. Know that he will make you something beautiful. You already are. You already are.
I just wanted to say one other thing I've been thinking about is that I've been thinking how it takes just as much discipline to be in shape as it does to be out of shape. And it takes just as much discipline to not learn about Christian Science as it does to learn about Christian Science. But only that discipline to learn Christian Science has actually helped me. So I just wanted to say that.
Where you devote your time and energy and what's important. So let it be in glorifying God. So pray you have a better understanding of soul and body, your oneness with the Father. These articles are wonderful. We're going to end now. Another wonderful article from Addresses by Martha Wilcox. Her article, Body, a small paragraph that I have worked with often.
Did
Do not fear anything that your present body seems to be doing. Every cell, fiber, tissue, gland, organ, or muscle of the human body exists right now in the one mind as idea. And each idea is proclaiming, I am reflecting God. I am expressing God. Every cell and fiber of my being is expressing the sovereignty of God or proclaiming, I am. Science and Health, page 162. Mrs. Eddy says, quote, immortal mind, governing all, must be acknowledged as supreme in the physical realm, so-called, as well as in the spiritual, end quote. Science and Health, page 427. All facts that we know humanly are summed up in the perception of the one fact that when we see, know, or understand anything that pertains to our human body or our present world, it is the unfolding of spiritual ideas and their identities.
So, remember, your body is the temple of the living God, and it expresses Him. Every cell, fiber of your being is proclaiming, I am God. And thank you for joining us.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.